your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, with Reiki Master and host, Phyllis Lee Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now, here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. In our series of interviews about treatment and specific projects or situations in which treatments have been applied, today I have Liz Lydon, and she's coming to us from Wales, the part of the island in the that also has Great Britain and Scotland, I mean England and Scotland on it. I never know politically correctly what to say about Wales, England, and Scotland. But she lives in a wonderful old house high up in the hills of Wales, North Wales. And this house is registered on the this Doomsday Book, which was a kind of census that was written, taken in the in British Isles in, I think, 1157 or something like that, if you can imagine. And out of this house, Liz has created an incredible home and also a jumping-off place for many of her projects, which range all over the world. And I'm really happy to have Liz here to talk about her experiences and her thoughts about going to South Africa to one of the native villages there and treating people with herbs, because she's also a master herbalist and Reiki. And I want to welcome you, Liz, to the show.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
And I hope I didn't bungle Wales, England, and Scotland too badly.
No, United Kingdom.
United Kingdom. Oh, yes, I keep forgetting that bit. So you've had a fantastic life, as far as I know, and I'm just wondering if you could if you could start with how you met Reiki.
Actually, about 16 years ago, well, it must be more, actually, I had Reiki all the time I was pregnant with Joshua. Not really because I decided to have Reiki, but it was just one of those things that happened, because I had massage every week. And then after he was born, I completely forgot about it. Until I woke up one morning, 3 years later, and thought, I need to learn Reiki. And I knew Kristen Bonney, who was our local Reiki master. And I met her in the street that day and said, I need to learn Reiki. And she said, about time. And she said, next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, get a class together. And this was Wednesday. And by the end of the day, I had six people willing to learn. So I learned Reiki and did first degree. And then 6 months later, I did second degree, and a few years after that, about 5 years after that, I kept like feeling I needed to, I was getting prompted to look at mastery, and everything in me rebelled against doing that. I really, really didn't want to do it, and had this huge fight in myself for a long time, until I came and talked to you and said stop, and you said start the process, and it doesn't matter where it takes you, but it did take me into mastery, and I haven't regretted it at all.
Mm-hmm. What do you think your fight was about?
My fight?
Yeah. Your we won't call it reluctance, but your, you know, sometimes we get these feelings of, oh, I should move, or I should do this, or I should do that, and I think it's just interesting to find out what you felt in hindsight was going on in you when you sort of resisted thinking about mastery?
Well, I knew it was something enormous, and it wasn't just about teaching.
Uh-huh.
And all the intellectual part of me, because I've always, like, no matter what I've done in my life, I've had to get to the ultimate stage of it. You know, stage four wouldn't do if there was a stage six. I would have to do stage six. And part of me was saying, no, you're just doing this because this is the next step. And But in hindsight, it was actually that it's made such massive changes in me. Huge changes, and it's been really challenging. Hugely challenging. And it's made me face things that I could have just bumbled along and never faced.
Uh-huh.
And it's brought me gifts that I couldn't even imagine.
What's one of the gifts?
I've learned to surrender.
Uh-huh.
Which I never ever could do before. I always fought everything.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've really learned to surrender and, when it's time to stop something or that it isn't my place to do things or that this is just how things can be.
Uh-huh.
And my whole relationship with death and life has changed. But I can just surrender to what is, really.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's beautiful. And for our listeners, would you say that this is something that comes sort of as a shift in perspective of your daily life or how you make decisions or?
Both of those, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's not just in my practice, it's in everything I do.
Uh-huh.
All my relationships, everything.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you were a master herbalist before you came into Reiki?
Yeah, I've been a master herbalist since 1987.
Uh-huh. So that's very intriguing, considering that you live in this wonderful doomsday house. And I always have this picture of you as this kind of modern-day potion maker. You know, stirring her cauldron up there.
And, I don't have a cauldron, but yes.
So, in taking your practice, which you had for many years, and then adding to that Reiki, what was that like for you?
Well, I assumed it was going to be just adding a treatment to what I did, but it's become less and less and less that. It's for me. You know, it is my personal practice. So I do give treatments to other people, but not that many. I certainly don't advertise that I do it. It's for me.
So Reiki is for you, and did it make a difference in the sense of your herbal practice? Did it make you?
Yes, it did.
Was it like more sensitive or more? I don't know. I don't have the words. I'll let you say it.
Yeah. Well, the difference it made was I stopped trying to control the outcome.
Uh huh.
Because in Reiki, I just give the treatment And I did a lot of treatments at the beginning. I mean, a lot. And I treated very, very sick people and very challenging people. And I just sat there and watched the changes, observed them. And I didn't specifically do anything except be there and hold the space and give the energy. And with the herbs, I started to do the same. I started to give people the remedies that I give them. And rather than when something started to change dramatically, putting something in to ameliorate it, or I'd just say stay with it.
Uh-huh.
And it's been really, really effective. And because I've had the confidence to say stay with it, not panic or worry, it's made huge changes possible in people.
Oh, wonderful. That's a very good point for all Reiki treatments, or all treatments, actually. And harkens back to one of my grandmother's sort of two-word admonishments, which is no expectations.
No.
Because one never knows where Reiki will lead you, or one never knows where this treatment will take you. And it's often on a different level than you would have imagined.
Yeah. You know, I used to get really easily bored by things, and yet I can sit for hours giving Reiki, and I'm never bored.
Well, then what do you do?
Because of that, I never know what's going to happen in the next minute.
So you're always on the alert and ready
for
whatever.
Well, not exactly, but I'm just observing. Not expectant, but, prepared for anything to happen.
Great. That's wonderful. Well, that's a wonderful thing to bring up, because I think that in our treatment practice and also in the way that we live our lives in Reiki, anything can happen in any moment, and that's true in the Reiki treatments and also true, I feel like, in our life. So somehow you got led to Africa. Is that true?
Yeah.
And that was one of the perhaps unexpected things that happened.
Well, I didn't expect it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and you've been other places also in the world?
Yeah, I worked out in the Caribbean at an exclusive island for very, very rich people to go and recoup from modern life. I went out there three times, I think, for 2 weeks. I did a month once.
And how was that?
It was the opposite extreme, really, from being in Africa, because everybody was so wealthy.
Right. Well, people have this idea that the wealthy are really a total separate population. And what do you think?
Well, the issues weren't so different. They were just they weren't. They were pretty similar, really. I mean, obviously people weren't dying of starvation out there, but...
Right.
Well, no, actually, that isn't true, because a lot of the women I saw, I mean, they'd never cooked a meal in their lives. They had all their food brought in. You know, I said to people occasionally, do you ever juice? And they say, oh, there's a juice bar down the road, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I have one woman with three children, and she had never cooked them a meal in her life. And everything was brought in. Some of the women I saw, they were so terrified of putting on an ounce. But they probably were on starvation level, actually. Out of choice.
Right, exactly. Well, it's amazing what we human beings put ourselves through. Well, I have a feeling that it's time for a break soon, so we're going to take one. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be back with more of Liz's stories of treatment and where in her adventures with Reiki in a moment. Thank you very much.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Never before in the history of live radio have such illuminating revelations challenged everything we thought we knew about the hidden realms. This exceptional mystic, seer, and healer creates a truly amazing bridge across the chasm that has separated man for eons from the unseen worlds of mystery. Join host Almeen for an extraordinary and enlightening hour by Walking Between the Worlds on Voice America's 7th Wave Network. Walking Between the Worlds airs live every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the 7th Wave Network.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We're here today with Liz Lydon from North Wales, the UK, and we've had a lovely discussion about treatment and about learning surrender through treatment practice. And we're just about ready to leap off into what some people have called the dark continent. And when I first really came into Reiki, I went to a wonderful conference. It was a transpersonal psychology conference in Davos, Switzerland. This was in the early 1980s. And there were a couple of people there who had, Michael Harner, I think, was one of them, who had just come back from Africa. And he was, talking about the psyche of Africa, that it's the dark continent, and it's where we should go in order to meet our dark side and the primitive part of ourselves and the part of ourselves that actually is about survival, this kind of root chakra energy. And I thought to myself, oh, I can't go there now, but I would love to. And in my whole, now it's been 27 years in really being active with Reiki and teaching it, I've always thought I would go to Africa. And last year, I had scheduled an event there, and I decided that I wasn't going to go to Africa because that would open up a whole other place to travel to. And here I am trying to cut down on my travel, especially long-haul flights. And so I have to do my African traveling, I think, a little vicariously. And I just want to say that I don't think that it's not that I haven't met my dark side. I feel like I did, especially, interestingly enough, in a time when I spent a lot of time in Australia. It was really a crazy, terrible time for me in Australia. And I realized that, it's just a lot of my fears and so on still come up for me there. And I'm going to Australia at the end of the year, and I'm going through it again. So it's fascinating where your dark side looms up. So I'm just wondering, after my little soliloquy, about your experience of going to Africa. And tell us the story of how you got there first, I guess. We could start there.
Well, a very close friend of mine started the charity that I went out with. And she used to work for the UN in Kenya. She was watching the television in 2000 on Christmas Eve and wrapping up her Christmas presents with her turkey in the oven. And she didn't have the sound on it, and she was watching this program that would just happen to be on, which was about Africa, and she was not having the sound on, wondering why there were no adults there. And a friend of hers rang up and who'd also lived in Africa at the same time and said, "Are you watching this program? It's horrific." And she said, "Turn the sound up." And then she heard that there were no adults because they'd all died. And all the little children were left and the grandparents were caring for them. And she was so absolutely horrified by this that she literally 2 weeks later got on a plane and flew out to Africa to see what she could do, and met with the government and all sorts of people, and she's a herbalist too, and was told that South Africa was definitely the worst place on the continent for AIDS, and that the place that she set up in Orange Farm, which was a no-go area for white people, was the worst place in South Africa. And one of the reasons it was the worst place was because nobody would go into it. It was supposed to be so bad. It was one of the illegal settlements that, you know, the doctors and the nurses, nobody would go in. And even now there's probably 5 million people living there. There's 2 half-time doctors and 4 clinics which open 4 mornings a week for 4 hours. And that
wow.
is it. There is no hospital. There is no anything. The churches are fantastic. I mean, they do an awful lot, but have really carried these people through. And that's been a big lesson for me, because I was brought up a Catholic, and we always used to have to pray for the missionaries and give money for the missionaries, and I could never understand as a child why the missionaries needed to go, because I was quite sure that people were perfectly capable of having religions of their own. So it's been very, very interesting to me to be on the receiving end and seeing that, I mean, not only are some of the people who came in as missionaries still there, very, very few, and that actually it's African people now who are the priests and the pastors.
Uh-huh.
And that they have the most incredible network, and that they really, the way that they hold their ministry is inspiring. You know, that they really see it as not just spiritually guiding the community, but holding them in a way of living so that they can come through what's going on for them. Because when people are starving and, you know, everybody's dying and there's no money coming in, it's an incredibly hard time.
Uh-huh.
And the huge gift for me about going out there is the fact that people haven't lost their dignity. You know, they hold their dignity. And they come in and they tell me about the funerals and all the people that they've lost and, you know, the awful things that are happening to them. And they say, and it's the will of God, so I carry on. I've never heard one person say that they feel sorry for themselves, ever. You know, and I've been out there 4 times now. And I've seen hundreds and hundreds of people. And I've never, ever heard anybody say they feel sorry for themselves.
Uh-huh.
And whenever anybody starts singing, everybody that can hear gets up and joins in. And it's quite, well, powerful.
Uh-huh.
I cry every time.
So,
just the sheer energy of it and what they carry.
Uh-huh. And so when you go there, what are you actually going to offer? Or
well,
what are you bringing
set up a
to
clinic.
Them?
I've been a trustee of the charity for quite a number of years now. So Annette set up this charity, and we have moved now to what is the 5th clinic and hopefully the final one.
Uh-huh.
So it was the old police station and holding prison, but it's actually an ideal space for us to be in because it has 68 hectares around it. So we're building a hospital and an orphanage for babies.
Oh, wow.
And 20 other orphanages. We've already got about 4,000 children in foster care, which we set up and then hand over to the social services.
Uh-huh.
The settlement.
Uh-huh. I think we'll
so
have
we
to take
hold
a, little...
a clinic for 6 days.
Uh-huh. Excuse me, Liz, I'm sorry. I think we have to take a little break now, and then we'll come back. Because,
okay.
You know, it's...
I wasn't looking at the time when I asked you the question, so we'll come back. All right. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be back just after the station break.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Marissa, are you ready yet? I know you can hear me. You are not missing school again. Marissa! You trying to be a nobody or something? Let's go! All right then. Hit it. I know you can hear this. Hey guys, move closer. That's it. Girl, I am not leaving.
Hey, whatever it takes, don't let your friends drop out. A real friend can make all the difference.
Cut that noise, yo! I'm coming! Took you long enough. Thanks for the help, guys.
For more ways to help, go to OperationGraduation.com. A public service message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist, Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life. Whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office, Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing, broadcast each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today we're taking a journey with Liz Lydon from Wales down to South Africa and her being led to be a part of a charity that's setting up a hospital and foster care for thousands of African children who have been left homeless and parentless by AIDS, this great epidemic of AIDS in South Africa and actually on the continent of Africa. So she was just explaining to us when I broke in for the break about the setup down there. So perhaps you could start again, Liz. I'm sorry.
We have
kind of a bad timing.
Yeah, we have a clinic. And we open for 6 days, once a month, and Annette and I go out and run the clinic, and we have quite a number of staff there who are local people, all qualified nurses. And people just turn up, as many people as want to come, and we don't go home until we finish, and the people are very, very sick. We do home visits.
It's
adults and children in the clinic. We started out just with HIV/AIDS, but because people heard about the results we were getting, we now get a lot of general medicine people as well.
And exactly what are you doing, you and your friend Annette? Is that her
Annette,
name?
Yeah. We give herbal medicine. We have to import all the herbs, although we've started growing a large number now, so we'll get more and more self-sufficient. So we make those into tinctures and we give those out to people. If they've got HIV or AIDS, it's free, and it's very, very low cost for anybody else. So we open the doors, and they start queuing from 5 o'clock in the morning to see us. So we start at 8
uh-huh.
and just work until we've finished.
I give Reiki to
all the people who are very sick or very stressed. So I do 20 to 30 minutes a person. But it's really peculiar because it's like time just stands still. I mean, I would swear I'd given the full treatment for an hour and a half. Because something just happens when I give the treatments, and they get everything they need, and I feel like I haven't cut it short. So that's been really interesting.
Well, that's wonderful. And what are the kind of results that you're getting?
Well, you have to sort of go very, very slowly because, you know, just having us come in at all was quite a big step for them to come and see us. And
that's
been out now for nearly 8 years, and I've been going for a year and a bit. And whenever you introduce anything new, you do it very, very slowly. So the first person I saw was a young girl who her mother, who was a Sangoma, a traditional healer, brought her in and said that she just stopped having any ability to initiate anything when she was about 13. And they didn't know why. She could do everything, but she never initiated anything. She just sat until somebody told her what to do, and then she would do it, and then she would just sit again. And she was wearing a hat, and she didn't take this hat off. So I thought, I think I'll give her some Reiki and just see what's going on with her. So I asked her if she'd like some, and she said yes. She's 36, but she still looks 13. And so I took her through, and I said, would you mind taking your hat off? And when she took her hat off, she had the most enormous tumour on her head. An enormous. And it was absolutely dead, this tumour. It had sort of died on her head. And they hadn't thought to mention this at all. So I predominantly worked on her head. And I think because of the Reiki, because we gave her herbs which would get rid of, you know, old material in the body, the tumour started to shrink and fall off after a couple of weeks.
Wow.
So this spread all over the settlement that I could make tumours fall off.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I've had quite a number of people because one of the things with AIDS and with people who are very malnourished is tumours. I mean, they get tumours everywhere. You know, the most peculiar places that you wouldn't expect them. Some of them are very large and some are malignant and most are not. But then I get a lot of AIDS patients, you know, very, very severe. And initially I was thinking, oh, gosh, you know, looking at all these sores and things all over people and that they were skin and bone and thinking, what do I do? And then I just looked at, I think the first person, I just looked in their eyes and thought, this is a human being. I just do exactly what I do with everybody else. And the touch is, it's very, very powerful, just the fact that I'm willing to touch them. And they soak up the Reiki. You know, most of them go to sleep because they've been in so much pain and so much stress that they don't sleep very much at all.
And when you do treat people with lesions and sores and so on, do you wear gloves or do
you put
gauze on it or you just treat them?
I avoid the weeping ones. Touch, but I do just put my hands over. I mean, I touch very lightly, but I do touch. And then I have antiseptic wipes that I use afterwards.
And
I thought about wearing gloves, and I thought, no, this would be horrible.
Yeah.
just did not feel right. It was like, you know, you're dirty or something, and no, it didn't feel right.
Well, you know, even in clinics today, you know, I go to my dental clinic and they change their gloves about 4 times, you know, in the course of cleaning my teeth, which drives me crazy. So, I mean, it maybe isn't comparable, but, you know, I can really understand that, and I know my grandmother would not approve of it. But the other thing is just to also make it possible for the person to be comfortable and for you to be comfortable so you can touch them.
Yeah, I mean, I'll make sure I've no cuts or open wounds on my hands or anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'd put a plaster on those if I had.
Great. And,
because we do have water now, but we've only just got water, you know, running water where we could wash our hands. And we make the herbs, you know, like we have all this health and safety here, but I mean, we make them there in great big washing tubs, 10 gallons at a time for each type, you know, stirring it with two people with great big wooden paddles, and then they bottle them into big bottles. With plastic jugs, and then from there they get bottled into smaller individual bottles for people to take out.
Amazing.
But it's very primitive. You know, quite often our water goes off or the electricity goes off or whatever, so we have to go out with buckets to standpipes to get the water to make the medicine.
So, it seems like this work really brings you back to a very... basic part of our humanness, which is survival. And I'm wondering how that has that stirred up things in you when you go down there, since you've been going down there?
I think it's made me grateful for every minute of being alive and for everything that we have here. And also, you know, when I see brothers and mothers and sisters and fathers carrying people in with AIDS and seeing just how much care they give them, and that isn't always so here. You know, people would be taken away to clinics or whatever, and the family would be afraid of catching it, but it's like I haven't seen that at all. You know, that they've been absolutely there and literally willing to carry their brothers on their back.
Wow.
Because can't walk.
Uh-huh.
And other people, you know, who are just so kind. You know, they'll ring us up and say that somebody's collapsed on the road with the heat or dehydration trying to get to us, and they'll sit with them until we go out and pick them up.
Wow.
I mean, yeah.
So has this changed how you have lived, or how you're living your life? In yourself?
I don't know. I'm sure it must have done.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this
I'm not conscious of how, except the gratitude. And it's given me more of a stillness inside that really lots of the things I worry about, I don't need to worry about at all. You know, they're really not important.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And are you and Annette doing this alone? I mean, do you seek other people to come and assist you, or is this limited by the government mental permission to go into the township?
No, we have 6 trustees out in Africa, and we've got 8, I think, in the UK. So the trustees come out at different times. But we have to be incredibly careful because it's just having white people on the settlement. I think they would freak out. You know, my picture was up on the wall for 18 months before I actually went, with Annette saying that I would be coming to everybody, so that when I came, I wasn't a shock. It's very, very hard to introduce people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how it'll be in the future. Because the, I think it's the Rugby World Cup. Might be the Football World Cup. Anyway, there's a World Cup in 2009, which is literally in the next town to where we are. So that is bringing in huge new infrastructure into the whole area, and lots of tourists are expected, and everybody's really excited and making all their national crafts and, you know, getting ready to give exhibitions and everything to entertain the tourists. So that will be very different. It's quite a big change point from mm-hmm. somewhere where nobody ever went. And about 2 years ago, they built the most beautiful railway station in the middle of this settlement. I mean, it would be a credit anywhere in the world, this railway station, which is very odd amongst all the shacks. And they've decided they had to spend £2.5 million. And that they built a shopping mall. They'd have thought it was more useful than a hospital. It's a strange place. Things are changing.
Yeah. You know,
and they've actually got roads and sewerage now, which they never had before.
Yeah. Well, amazing. What a
they've planted
thought
trees
that
along the sides of the roads, so it's starting to look like a place that people live rather uh-huh. than squat.
Great. Well, it's time for a station break. We'll be back with our last segment with Liz in just a few moments. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The law of attraction is very much in today's public awareness. In reality, it is not a new concept. Join Liana Carbone for Living Wisdom, the Art of Shamanism and Spirituality. Discover the roots of the law of attraction and go beyond its theories to manifest a life of balance and prosperity. Living Wisdom can be heard each Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network. Come join us to dream, learn, and heal.
Hey, how you doing? Educational videos, top quality, right here.
You'll never hear anyone selling education on the street. But with free family learning programs, you can get the education you need. Call 1-877-FAMLIT-1 for information on free learning programs. 1-877-FAMLIT-1.
Check it out. Win your GED right here, guaranteed, ma. Come on, check it out.
Free family learning programs from the National Center for Family Literacy. Brought to you by the National Center for Family Literacy and the Ad Council.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I have with me today Liz Lydon, who has taken her Reiki and with it her knowledge of herbs to South Africa, to a township, and watched it develop. And we're just speaking a little bit about the modernization, so to speak, that comes and has been sort of, I guess, spurred on by this World Cup sports event that's going to happen just in the next township. So I'm wondering, Liz, then you said that this township was an unofficial one when Annette started to go there.
Yeah.
Has that status changed?
Not officially, but because they're investing in it. You know, as I say, it's got roads, it's got sewers. They're trying to replace the shacks with stone-built houses, but as quickly as they do that, the immigrants are coming in from the refugees are coming in from all the countries around, because there's three countries with civil wars around, so they just pour in. So The problem never goes away, and I don't actually know how they're coping with it, but they seem to be. Mm-hmm. But we get people from every African country coming into our clinics. I mean, they fly in now. It's quite incredible.
So you have six clinics now, did you say?
We have a clinic on 6 days, yeah.
Oh, on 6 days.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So what do you think, I always have had a dream of being able to organize Reiki practitioners from, in the international community to go in and treat people because, there's this whole, to go in and treat people because I feel like it's such a important, I don't know another word for it, education for us as human beings to understand and to be able to touch the lives of our fellow men and women in different situations. And I feel like that's been a huge gift for you. And wondering, can you imagine that happening in this project, or do you think that would just create too much confusion and misunderstanding?
Yes, I can, but in the next few years. It's like slowly. Uh-huh. You know, like when I first went, I saw the odd patient on my own, but there was no way, apart from giving Reiki, that I would be on my own with a patient.
Right.
And now I run the clinics on my own some days.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Because, they now trust me. I'm like, Annette and I have this vision that we're going to have a really big healing area where we give Reiki and people will come in and give Reiki and hopefully we can teach. But nobody seems very interested in, it hasn't occurred to them that they could do it.
Right.
Even though I say this is something you could learn, it's like outside of their comprehension at the moment. They're more than willing to receive.
But
we haven't reached that next phase.
Yes. And I've always felt, my grandmother...
And it may not be their way, but they're willing to receive it. And sometimes they pray over me in case I'm bringing the devil in, and, they make lots of symbols and do things.
Uh-huh. How does that feel to you?
Well, the first couple of times I was a bit shocked, and then I just say, there's only one God, and it all comes from God. And if that's your way of connecting to God, then it's supporting what I do. And then they're happy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And have you ever run into anything untoward when you're there, and how has that been for you?
What was the Reiki?
With Reiki, with the people, and mostly with Reiki, just...
No, certainly not in the treatments, no. I mean, nobody has had a negative reaction or said they don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, felt that it's made them worse or anything like that, no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I have this theory, and I don't know, some people think I'm something. But anyway, I feel that when people are really at the ground level of survival, that for us, it's a luxury to be able to have the energy to give
yes.
a treatment. And this is part of the difference of these different levels, that we have actually, I would call myself middle class, Western society person, that before I got into Reiki, I had no idea that there could be such a difference between survival and the way that I was brought up.
Yeah.
And I think the degree of extreme is a really beautiful thing to understand as a human being. Not that it's a beautiful thing to have on our planet, but it is just so. And that somehow this is also a part of who we are underneath, that we
cover up or we explain away, because we have the luxury of having to make excuses or have reasons for what we're doing or whatever. It's not about survival.
No.
And it seems like what you've experienced down there has been an amazing potpourri of different things that have come to you clearly from this very basic level of survival.
Yeah, you know, and then I treat children who've been raped. You know, there's this myth goes around Africa that if you rape a child virgin, then your AIDS will go away. So we have to, you know, they gang rape the children.
Gosh.
So we have to treat the children, and then, you know, there's still a lot of witch doctor stuff goes on, which uses human body parts, and then you've got, you know, there's a horrible dark side there, which is there.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I have to deal with that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, and black people who get killed or very severely beaten by white people just because they're black.
Mm-hmm.
But equally now, the black people are attacking white people just because they're white.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And does that affect you at this point in yourself? Like, are you afraid of going down there now?
No.
No?
No. No, I've been to lots of places in the world where if I thought about it, I'd be afraid. But actually, my experience has always been that I've been safe.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't go in with an agenda or to make people wrong or right or whatever. I just go there to be.
Uh-huh. Well, that's certainly what people are in those kind of cultures, I feel like, is being. And if they sense that you come in without an agenda, it's a great relief, I think.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as I got there, I felt like I'd come home. I'd been to Egypt, but I'd never been to Africa before, you know, that part of Africa at all.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Beautiful.
And I love the people. I mean, they're so generous.
Isn't it wonderful that they can, in our Western sense, have nothing and still be generous?
Yeah.
And that's a quality, I think, that actually sometimes I feel lacking in our Western society. You know, there's always an exchange. But
yeah.
Can you give, you know, yeah. without having any connection or any attachments? And, you know, that's one thing about true service and charity, and that's something that I wanted to slip in our last moments of our talking together. Do you have a sense of now, a different sense of what charity is or what service is in your
point on there? Absolutely. Yeah. It's a sharing of my humanity with somebody else, really. You know, and it costs me thousands and thousands of pounds to go there, but it doesn't feel like I'm wasting it or giving it away or I should be getting something back. I mean, it's just rewarding to be there. I feel such a privilege. You know, and the fact that people do trust me and allow me to treat them, especially when they're so sick.
Uh-huh.
Because it must be very, very frightening for them to have, you know, after all their awful experiences with white people that they've had and being less than second-class citizens, that, you know, somebody wants to come and put their hands on them.
Beautiful, Liz.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah. Well, this is our conclusion of this interview. Thank you very much, Liz, for your time and your beautiful words.
Thank you.
And this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.